This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer. James Olson has written one book about cancer and is at work on another about, in part, his own oncologists, their colleagues in their hospital. Mr. Olson began writing about cancer because he had cancer, soft tissue sarcoma, which destroyed his left hand. In 1987, his hand and forearm were amputated, and then 3 years ago, he was operated on for a cancerous brain tumor. James Olson is at member station KUHF in Houston. Mr. Olson, welcome.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
When you decided to write about cancer, why did you make a decision like that? Because, I mean, I would think that you would be obsessed with your own cancer to start out with, but just to make it your work as well, so that you had to write about it, think about it, talk about it to other people. Why'd you do that?
And for me, it was to distract me from the cancer. It seems odd to kind of write about cancer to distract you from it. I was getting a radiation treatment under a big mega-voltage radiation machine at MD Anderson, thinking, good grief, I have cancer again. What can I do about it in terms of how can I turn a lemon into lemonade? I thought, why don't I write about cancer and read about it and kind of think about it? And I picked breast cancer simply because it's a the disease you hear about so often. I mean, it seems like there's a made-for-TV movie or a new news flash all the time about breast cancer. And then it had these interesting gender implications where the vast majority of patients are women, the vast majority of physicians treating them have been men over the centuries, and there's always that tension and that dynamic there that is interesting to an historian.
I was fascinated to read that breast cancer has been diagnosed for a very long time. I mean, back to ancient history, I suppose, because it's a visible cancer, like your soft tissue sarcoma was. Those kinds of cancers are the reason that the history goes back as far as it does?
That's exactly correct. You know, if someone died of a brain tumor or of colon cancer or of leukemia 5,000 years ago, nobody knew what killed them. But breast cancer, as it goes untreated, creates havoc in the chest and the thoracic region and becomes very, very visible, does huge amounts of damage. And so when someone died after having this disease have progressed so visibly, it was easy to conclude what had caused the death. So, for medical historians, breast cancer is cancer.
Surgery on the breast also goes back a long time.
Well, yes, you go back to the Egyptians, 5,000 years ago, and mastectomy was the treatment for breast cancer. They knew then that, the tumor had to be removed.
You said something at the beginning about one of the things that interested you about breast cancer was the tension between men who do the research and perform the surgery and so on and women who have the disease. Could you just talk a minute about what you think of when you think of that tension?
Let me tell a story with it that comes from Dr. Susan Love, who is the surgeon out at UCLA. She had a patient come in who was pondering a mastectomy and a reconstruction surgery. And she asked one of her male physicians first, after the operation, how will it feel? I know what it's like. I mean, I've had my lymph nodes removed. The nerves are all severed. It's completely numb and dead. My tricep muscle is completely numb. I mean, the lymph nodes don't collect fluids anymore very well or don't process them, so you're kind of puffy all the time. And it's kind of annoying and a little bit disabling. And this male surgeon said to her, it will feel completely normal. Well, the question she asked is, how is my chest going to feel? And the question he answered was, if I touch it, or if a man touches it, or someone's making love to it, it will feel completely normal. He didn't
to
have a
clue. Him, it will feel completely normal. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Exactly. Right. And it's a story that kind of captures, I think, the whole history of it, making that gender issue relevant.
I wonder if you could read for us an account of Alice James, who was a sister to Henry and to William. She died of breast cancer right around the time surgeons were beginning to perform the new radical mastectomy.
That's correct. She was a brilliant woman at a time when brilliant women had difficulty finding venues for the expression of their talent. And she had these two brothers, of course, that were widely accepted, William James, the psychologist, and the novelist Henry James, who were absolutely brilliant. And she was as brilliant, and everybody knew it, except society and her own father, I guess, because of the times in which he lived and the culture in which he functioned, just could not take her seriously, take her intellect seriously.
You write that at the age of 50, she really was sick. After a lifetime of being sick without knowing why, Alice James exulted in the diagnosis. Could you read for us for a few paragraphs, beginning with In Her Diary?
Sure. In her diary, she wrote, "Ever since I have been ill, I have longed for some palpable disease, no matter how conventionally dreadful a label it might have. To anyone who has not been there, it will be hard to understand the enormous relief of Sir A.C.'s, now that's her physician, uncompromising verdict, lifting us out of the formless vague. One would naturally not choose such an ugly and gruesome method of progression down the dark valley of the shadow of death, but we shall gird up our loins, and the blessed peace of the end will have no shadow cast upon it. She fought the good fight. The tumor spread to her liver and lungs, and she died on March the 4th, 1892. Henry was at her side. Quote, her face, he recorded in his journal, then seemed in a strange, dim, touching way to become clearer. I went to the window to let in a little more of the afternoon light, and when I had come back to the bed, she had drawn the breath that was not succeeded by another." Unquote.
What about your own attitude toward your own cancer? It's hard to imagine that very many people could face a life-threatening illness as Alice James did.
Lots of people do. You have to, in the end. I've been at it so long. I mean, it's been 20 years now of surgeries and amputations and brain surgery and radiotherapy and chemotherapy and, you know, and everything. And it's been 22 years now. And I've come to view cancer, at least for me, as kind of a chronic disease. I'm even tired of the metaphors of war with cancer. I'm tired of hearing about conquering cancer. I'm tired of people telling me to battle my cancer, to fight my cancer. You know, my cancer is much a part of me now as my right arm is, my feet, my hair. It's here. It has been so long, I can't remember not having it. And it's going to be with me until I take my last breath as well.
Well, now, you've decided to write your next book basically about your doctors in your hospital, MD Anderson, to many people all around the country, and certainly to anyone who's had cancer west of the Mississippi. It's the premier cancer hospital. It's in Houston. Why did MD Anderson attract you?
Well, over the years, I've 23 years now, walking around the place, and come to know it almost like I hate to use the word home, because during bad times I would not retreat there for peace and quiet. Nevertheless, it has been really a wonderful institution. And what's happened there is, you know, for me is a chance to kind of try to weave together a story of people and of patients and of caregivers and of science and of culture, kind of all coming together in one institution over, you know, a long period of time. I've been just reading correspondence, documents in the hospital's history here for the last year and a half, really the last 3 years now. I was right about now, I was supposed to have a manuscript ready for them, but brain cancer and chemotherapy set me back. I had some minor deficits after the brain surgery. And a little bit of depression, well, not a little bit, quite a bit of depression. I kept going to work every day, but it just wasn't as creative as, you know, when people are depressed or very, very preoccupied. It's hard to be creative.
What sort of expectations do you think you have? And how much do you hate hearing that kind of question from somebody like me?
That question doesn't bother me at all. I happen to have what's called an brain tumor of choice. Okay, if you have to have a malignant brain tumor, mine is what's known as an oligodendroglioma. Now, these are incurable. But nevertheless, it's been lazy now for a year and a half. I really do. I really like the idea of a lazy tumor rather than an aggressive one. So, they tell me that I could have years ahead of me now. It's a curious thing. I had my last checkup, and my doctor had suggested that I go down to get a baseline, have a colonoscopy to have a look at my colon at my age. Now I'm 56, and my first thought was, why bother with my colon when I have a brain tumor? It's going to kill me first.
I think I'm with you on that.
Yeah, better yet, a PSI test for prostate cancer. And that's much easier to do than the colonoscopy. And the oncologist said, we don't know. He said, you have a proclivity for cancer in the family. This tumor could stay indolent for years. And wouldn't it be ironic, because you were careless with your colon and prostate, that you died of that first before brain cancer? I thought that would be ironic.
So. James Olson, thanks very much for talking to us.
Well, I really appreciate you having me here. Thank you.
James Olson is a professor of history at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville. His most recent book is called Bathsheba's Breast, Women, Cancer, and History.